This is Cashing Out with your host, Dustin Sweetelson, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back at it on Cashing Out. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. It's VSiN, the sports betting network. Still to come on the program, should this player be eligible for Comeback Player of the Year? More on that in about 15 minutes on the show. Bottom of this hour, we talk Raiders with Adam Hill, who's covered the team for a while now. His thoughts on this matchup in the preseason on Thursday with the Houston Texans. And big picture, where is that spot where Fernando Mendoza takes over as the starter? Because I got to tell you, for a team that's trying to be more competitive, I don't see any easy landing spots. That includes a matchup a few weeks in that people are identifying against the Jets as if that's the spot for him. I'll ask Adam about that later on in the program. And now we're going to do what I love to do at this time every week, chat with our buddy Eric Cohen. You know him, Sportsline Handicapper on X, at Cohen's Corner AZ. And we've got a lot of sports to tackle here. You can smell college football. We'll be all over that next week. But explain to me the BMW Championship. What are we looking at here? Because right now the odds have Scottie Scheffler as the favorite at plus 305. Rory is 13-1. That is a huge difference between number one and number two on the board. Explain the event to me. What are we looking at? And specifically, what are we doing with Scottie Scheffler?
All right, Dustin, first of all, you cannot bet Rory McIlroy right now. Rory McIlroy, I don't want to say he doesn't care about the PGA Tour, but Rory McIlroy wants to win majors. And yeah, there's a lot of money on the line, but he was awful last week. Unbettable until proven otherwise. Maybe next week is the week. I'm not touching him this week. The thing about Scottie Scheffler, do you really want to bet a guy to win at 3-1? Yeah, a whole tournament at a course that we haven't seen on the PGA Tour in 8 years. Scottie Scheffler's never played it professionally. Do you really want to bet him at 3-1? I can't. But I also don't want to – I mean, there's got to be ways around it. So I'm playing the without Scottie Scheffler market, and I'm embarrassed, Dustin, and I apologize. I have three chalks for you. That's what I got. I'm going to go. If you want me to roll with it,
do it.
I'll give it to you. Yeah. Let's start with Xander Schauffele, 14-1 in the without Scottie Scheffler market. He was a solo second at the Rocket Classic in Detroit, which was a comp course to here. The ball striking has been really good. The putter's been really good lately. But he's looking for his first non-major win on the United States mainland since 2022. It's a lot to ask. 14-1, yeah, he could finish second place behind Scotty. I'm good with that. Same with Ludvig Åberg, really talented guy. I know you like betting Ludvig Åberg. 14-1 in the without Scotty market. So here's my stat on him. Each one of the top six finishers with ties in the 2018 PGA Championship finished with at least six strokes gained ball striking. Ludvig has done that six times this season and was real close to doing it again last week. He's gained off the tee in 14 of 17 and on approach in 15 of 17 events this year. Yeah, he can finish second behind Scottie Scheffler. Another guy that I don't know if I want to take in the outright market, but behind Scottie, I'm okay with it. The last guy is a guy who's been red hot this season, Cam Young, 16-1. His ball striking has been great, but his putter has stunk lately. We just don't know what to expect. There's no course history here. I'm trusting the ball striking, and I believe Cam Young will be in the mix at 16-1 on Sunday in the without market.
So that's Ludvig, that's Xander, that's Cam Young. Those are the three guys you're looking at for outrights at the BMW. Eric Cohen is our guest at Cohen's Corner AZ, host and analyst, Sportsline as well. Let's get to Major League Baseball because I got to tell you, man, I'm surprised I even have enough teeth to smile. I've been getting my teeth kicked in so much with baseball. The numbers aren't making sense, so give me something. What can I look forward to coming up on Thursday that we should be attacking on the board?
Dustin, I'm embarrassed to say this as well. It's like they're giving us free money. The books are. Thank you. I got a two-team parlay for you. Let's start with the Guardians money line. Now, I'm not going to tell you to lay minus 196 by itself, but the San Francisco Giants are throwing out a pitcher named Landon Roop. Landon Roop is the Giants are 2-16 in his last 18 starts, going up against Gavin Williams from the Guardians, who's been pretty good lately. Last two starts, not as great. So I'm going to take them at home, coming off a 1-0 loss tonight. And then, so the Milwaukee Brewers are 8-1 in their last nine home series, including 5-0 after the All-Star break. They won 22-0 on yesterday against the Mariners and lost tonight 7-5, but they were down 7-0 and rallied. We got George Kirby on the mound for the Mariners. He has a 4.55 road ERA and 5.05 daytime ERA. I don't think much of Robert Gasser for the Brewers, but Milwaukee's just a lot better than Seattle is. So Guardians money line, Brewers money line, we're going to parlay those together at plus 168. Are you with me?
I like where your head's at there, getting creative with the old parlays here. Speaking of parlays, that's what you're going to do with college football win totals. What are we looking at here? You're saying it pays out 25 to 1?
This pays out 25. This is a beauty. I cooked this one up on Monday just for this show. You ready?
Let's do
it. All right. This is a five-legger. Nebraska over 5.5 wins. So it's a little juicy at minus 210, but Nebraska should start 5-0. Last seven games are tough. If they can find a win there in the last seven games, I think we got this. So, okay. Basically, I'm saying 1 out of 7 here gets us that one. I have Virginia over 7.5 wins. That's minus 150. The schedule in the ACC isn't bad, and they avoid Miami. The tough road games, I just don't see a lot there. I think they can get to 8 or 9 wins once again. Love Air Force in the Mountain West. Over 7.5 wins is plus 120. Troy Calhoun's one of the longest tenured coaches in college football. Has been there for 2 decades. He's an alum. They've been not great the last couple of years. I think they bounce back, and I think they show something. So I could see this team winning 9 or 10 games. The over 7.5 is plus money at plus 120. Then we get to the fun one. How about Iowa State under 3.5? You're talking about Stanford in the last segment under 3.5. Give me Iowa State under 3.5, and that is plus 215. Iowa State stinks, Dustin. Like, they have a whole new team, and Matt Campbell took most of their good players to Penn State. Their schedule, I have them going 0-9 in the Big 12, so I'm going with the under 3.5 for Iowa State. I actually have them at 2-10, to be honest with you. And then over 9.5 for Georgia regular season wins at minus 190. I have Georgia winning the national title. I think they go 10-2 at worst in the regular season. So let's go over 5.5 for Nebraska, over 7.5 for Virginia, over 7.5 for Air Force, under 3.5 for Iowa State, over 9.5 for Georgia, and that pays 25-1. What do you think?
This is a safe space. We're amongst friends. Here's my hot take I've been thinking about for a while. Nebraska improved at quarterback with Anthony Calandria coming in over Dylan Raiola. Like, we're going to find out that Dylan Raiola, with all the shtick and the pump fakes, there wasn't a lot of substance there the last couple years for the Huskers. I do like that one. I love Virginia. They have a couple quarterbacks to choose from. Great schedule. And I like that Tony Elliott got off the hot seat last year. It was a pressure season. Air Force, Calhoun loves the team based on the recruit, the quotes I'm reading. UGA over 9.5, absolutely love it. I think they win the league, even though I think Texas is the more talented team. Iowa State under 3.5. I kind of think, like, Iowa State and South Florida, where the previous coach took the entire program with him to the next stop, how do you even think about going over? You have to go under. So I like where your head's at with all of those there. Let's stay in college football, your alma mater. The Arizona Wildcats, win total 7.5, overs plus 105, unders minus 125. Noah Fifita's back. Brennan got, you know, got people like you having him off the hot seat. Calm the waters there with the Wildcats in Tucson. What do you make of Arizona this season?
All right, Dustin, I'm biased here. I'm a season ticket holder, a longtime season ticket holder. I drive 2 hours each way to go to the games. Listen, I love this team this year. Noah Fifita. In Tucson, they started a Heisman campaign today for Noah Fifita. Now, I'm not laying the juice at 100-1. I don't think Arizona's that good, but I could see Arizona going 8-4 here. They have to go at BYU in week 2. Now, the coaching staff that I've talked to on my Arizona podcast thinks they can win that game. I'm not there yet. But you look at the non-conference, Northern Arizona, Northern Illinois, who stinks. You win at Washington State, who's rebuilding. Then you get the in-conference play. You get Cincinnati at home at West Virginia. That's a tricky one. Rich Rod, former U of A coach, an off week, and Iowa State. So the Wildcats theoretically should be 6-1. Here's the problem. They go at Texas Tech, home TCU, home Utah, at Kansas State, home Arizona State. Can they find 2 wins in those 5 games? And the answer is yes. I have Arizona going 8-4, and I will take that plus money, and I will play my alma mater. And yes, You can understand where I'm biased, but I'll be real with you. If I think they're going to lose, I'll pick against them.
All right, let's look at the Big 12 as a whole, because I got to tell you, I'm on an island not buying the Texas Tech hype. I understand that they hit the portal hard, but they lost the heartbeat of their defense in Rodriguez. They also lost David Bailey, who was a top pick. They're the favorites at even money. BYU's 5.5 to 1. There's nobody making the case for BYU not to be the one to look at in the Big 12. Is there a long shot worth playing in this league?
Boy, I'll tell you what. I really like the Utah Utes at plus 670. Now, I know they lost a lot, losing Kyle Whittingham, but Dustin, their schedule is a joke. Like, it's bad. They don't play Texas Tech. They get BYU at home. Their toughest game is at TCU. I only gave them one loss. I have them going 11-1, and by beating BYU, I think that gets them into the Big 12 championship game. If Texas Tech, I still think Texas Tech is the class of the conference, but I have Texas Tech and Utah in the Big 12 championship game at plus 670 with that schedule. I think you have to take a long look.
Yeah, I like the idea. Devin Dampier, no longer Whittingham there, which feels like that might have been hanging over them the last couple seasons. I don't hate that. I don't hate the idea. I love Houston at 17-1. I don't know if everyone else is with me, but I think Houston is sneaky good with Willie Fritz back for another season as well. He's Eric Cohen. Check him out at Cohen's Corner AZ and over at Sportsline as well. Appreciate the time as always, my friend. Good luck with all the bets.
We'll see you next week.
Hey, tomorrow, VSiN is officially on the clock for the second annual Pro Football Futures Draft. 13 hosts and guests face off in a fantasy football style snake draft hosted by yours truly. Every pick doubles as a handicapping breakdown that you can use. Win totals, division winners, props, and stat leaders. We also add Keyshawn Johnson, comedian, sports commentator Nick Bakay, the guru John Hansen. Don't just watch the futures draft, profit from it. Tune in on Thursday, 5 p.m. Eastern, only on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Cashing out. You're on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back at it on Cashing Out. I'm Dustin Sweetelson coming to you from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas, broadcasting per usual. Sirius XM Channel 158, YouTube TV, the VSiN Watch app, and radio affiliates across the United States of God Bless America. Still to come on the show, we tackle the baseball card coming up for Thursday. Not a full slate, but there were a few that piqued my interest. More on that later on in the show. Right now, though, what we like to do at this time every day, because if you're listening to my voice, you probably don't get to catch every single show. Maybe you don't wake up early with VSiN by the Books, Jensen Lewis and Dave Ross. Perhaps you miss the afternoons with Follow the Money, or it's Prop Points, it's Money Moves. Don't worry. The best of the best, we bring it to you every night in a thing we do called Night Bites.
At 4th-and-1 at midfield, you're up 11. The Raiders really can't do anything.
But they're one of the best teams in baseball.
Night Bites.
Night Bites. Before we get to the clips, just want to remind everyone, Rainbow Authentics and VSiN are taking the bets to the beach. Tim Murray, Matt Youmans, they're heading to Hawaii for a special edition of VSiN Primetime, live from the islands, Wednesday, August 26th, plus a beach edition of the College Football Betting Podcast, breaking down all the Week Zero action. Don't miss VSiN in Paradise, live from Hawaii, Wednesday, August 26th, starting 7 p.m. Eastern, only on VSiN. By the way, Matt Youmans might as well be the mayor of Hawaii. I need a list because I have not been. I want to go to Hawaii. The top 10 things that Matt Youmans says you have to do in Hawaii. I swear, every time he's off from the show, he's in Hawaii. So you figure that's what, 2, 3, 4 times a year? Somewhere in that range, not including this trip? He's the guy to ask when it comes to Hawaii tips. So with that, let's go back to what we were originally doing here, which was Night Bites, bringing you the best sound bites from earlier in the day. Prop Points, Nick Whalen, Jeff Erickson. They do betting. They do fantasy. You're getting ready for your fantasy football drafts. Tight end, there's always a debate of who to target there, as that position has really risen the last few years with some elite receivers. Theo Greminger, RotoWire lead NFL analyst, was on with the boys earlier today and talked about taking Brock Bowers over Trey McBride this season.
I think Brock Bowers could potentially be the league winner for fantasy football this year. I'm going Bowers. McBride's been fine, though. Like, McBride is so beat up with a lot of fantasy analysts who are outright fading him. A lot of people sort of trying to push Colston Loveland ahead of McBride, make arguments for Tyler Warren being sort of a discount McBride. So I think McBride is fine. I'm not trying to talk people off of McBride, but when we talk about which player could put up a break fantasy type season, we look at Brock Bowers, 23 years old in the Clint Kubiak offense. Last year, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, 23 years old, Clint Kubiak offense. We look at the target competition. It's incredibly minimal. We look at what Bowers was able to do as a rookie, 153 targets, 112 catches. And he had an absurd amount of yak that year as well. I think Bowers could be the first 20-point-per-game tight end since Travis Kelce in 2020. I think this is a massive year for Bowers. So ceiling outcome, I'm definitely going Brock Bowers. But I'm not trying to talk you off Trey McBride at the discount. I think they're both okay picks, but Bowers is a much better pick.
Yeah, I think undoubtedly when you look at Brock Bowers and the situation with Kubiak coming in, knowing that that's his number one option in the offense to throw the ball to, McBride still probably is number one for Arizona, but he has a legitimate threat with Marvin Harrison Jr. if he develops. There's still Michael Wilson. There's other guys to get the ball to. And for Bowers, he at least has Kirk Cousins to start the year. And I think when you factor in the offensive mastermind of Clint Kubiak, understanding how competitive the Raiders need to be this year, I think Bowers getting the ball a lot. You guys know this. I'm on 70-1 offensive player of the year. A tight end's never won that award. But if anyone was going to have those ridiculous numbers, it is Bowers. Bowers' season-long prop, over under 924.5. He easily cleared this his rookie year. Probably would have easily gotten there as well last year if not getting injured. If he stays healthy with a competent quarterback now, I love Bowers over that. And then McBride, 999.5 receiving yards for him. He had 1,239 a year ago. While I prefer Bowers over him, I don't hate the idea of betting the over on that as well because both these guys are on losing teams. Losing teams throw more at the end of games. That's more stats to add here as you're trying to come back from a deficit. So that's why I think that makes a lot of sense. Now let's go to money moves as Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel, they have you covered in the midday at 2 p.m. Eastern time. And they were talking about the Comeback Player of the Year award, and I agree with them here. I'm not really sure Patrick Mahomes should qualify this season.
He played 14 games last year.
Correct.
Is he coming back?
And he was terrible, too. So maybe that layers into it of why he's that short. But like, that's not supposed to be a part of it.
Yeah, no, I'm just wondering, like, is he coming back? He played 14 games. You know what I mean? Like, you didn't miss that much time. Voters consider him a comeback player? Because, like, when I view comeback, I mean, you're coming back from adversity.
It's and overcoming adversity hardship, adversity, and injury.
Sure. But you played 14 games last year. Like, and to your point, I mean, there were 6-8 in his starts. Again, quarterback record's not a start. But either way, my whole point is, to your point about the guys that are coming back from injury, wouldn't you consider Jaden Daniels' comeback more of a comeback?
100%.
Right? Kyler Murray, Daniel Jones, things like that. And even then, Jones got hurt in December. I think you make the argument there. But either way,
but
my whole point.
I just looked at this market and thought that was way too short.
No, I'm with you. I'm agreeing with you. Yeah. Like, I wonder, and this, again, you're handicapping voters. Will voters view, that is my base question, will voters view Patrick Mahomes as a comeback candidate, even though he played in 14 games last year? And what's the cutoff? If he had played in 16 games and got injured in the final week, is he coming back? Or in the penultimate week, is he a comeback player? Where is your cutoff of, right? What if you got hurt in the final play of the last game of the regular season? I'm just curious.
I genuinely think the answer is yes, and it's because of the injury itself. It's not because of what you did prior to that. It's because of what you're coming back from.
Okay. I think that's a fair response too.
Okay, I agree with JVT completely here. A couple things at play. One, I actually think the voters are stupid and they are going to vote for Patrick Mahomes potentially because they just want to give him some sort of accolades. But I think we can all agree, NFL Comeback Player of the Year, after the DeMar Hamlin debacle where Joe Flacco won coming off his couch, this is the worst award in all of sports. Definitely the worst one to bet on. It is so disingenuous because what is really quantifiable here? Is Patrick Mahomes coming back from more than Jaden Daniels? And are they coming back more than Kyler Murray, who's 6-1? And what if Aaron Donald returns from retirement at 9-1? Malik Nabers is off an injury. Daniel Jones also 14-1 off of an Achilles. What? And how much do the results matter? That's another thing. So what are we weighing more when it comes to comeback player of the year? Is it these guys had more difficult circumstances with a more gruesome injury to return for? These guys had a better year? If it's comeback player of the year, I'm not sure performance should matter as much as what they went through to get back to the level they're playing at. So just because Mahomes would have a better year than Jaden Daniels doesn't mean with the team results factor in, he should be a guy who gets the award over Daniels if all things are kind of equal. I don't really understand the parameters still. I know they tried to make things clearer by telling us that they don't want a situation like Hamlin and Flacco to ever happen again. And that's why I did not win my bet on Sam Darnold. But you can't tell me that Mahomes, because he's going to play better and his team's going to be better, he just gets comeback player of the year. There are so many guys deep down this board that the story matters as well. And it feels like the NFL just wants to completely ignore that aspect of this thing. Next one up here, we go to Follow the Money. Mitch Moss, Pauly Howard. You catch him at 4 p.m. Eastern time every day here on the network. They talked about Jordan Love and the Green Bay Packers. And what if there's a world where Jordan Love puts the team on his shoulders? Could he be a long shot MVP candidate?
I like Jordan Love. I have not gotten to the point where I like love him. Like, no pun intended. But I do really think that he can be a super solid quarterback. I don't think his coach is very good.
Nope.
I don't love LaFleur at all. And again, consensus rankings here, if they're accurate, going into the season, fourth worst offensive line in the entire league, something that they haven't had in a long, long time. No Parsons, obviously. What the hell's going to happen with Josh Jacobs? I think a very shaky wide receiver room, specifically when, not if, but when Christian Watson gets injured. And again, Tucker Kraft, per reports, he might be the best tight end in football. He is probably going to be out of pitch count, snap count, to begin the season. Those are all the negatives going in that direction. Oh, by the way, probably the most difficult division in football. So if this guy is the reason why they're winning games, then he will completely win me over. And if that's the case, like if the Packers somehow win that division and they go over their win total, Jordan Love can win the MVP at that point. But that's a lot of big ifs that we're talking about here.
But Mitch is correct. That's the narrative that would be built. The offseason losses with Wicks and Romeo Doubs gone, losing Jeff Hafley on defense, Parsons not playing till later in the season. If Love somehow catapults his team up, he absolutely can win MVP. I'm not a Green Bay guy. I'm not a Jordan Love guy. I am a Matt LaFleur guy. I disagree with Mitch on that. I think Matt LaFleur is actually a good in-game coach when he has a good team. And I think that maybe if he gets let go this year because things go poorly, he'll get a job scooped up in the next couple of years, be a head coach again, kind of like Robert Saleh. Hey, week zero, college football is almost here. The NFL regular season's right behind it. Now's the time to get your edge with VSiN Pro. Join VSiN Pro today. Get instant access to the college football and NFL betting guides, plus everything we do over at VSiN.com. Best bets, betting splits, AI-powered prop tools, plus 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app. Start today for just $9.99 or save 50% with a VSiN Pro annual subscription. Sign up now at VSiN.com/subscribe.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
NFL preseason week two, it will get going with the Raiders at the Texans. Those two teams have been battling in camp at Houston for the last few days here. Questions about what we're going to see. Houston's not playing their starters. We know Mendoza's going to play a chunk. How much Kirk Cousins will wind up being under center for the Raiders in week two of the preseason? We'll discuss that and more in the outlook for Las Vegas this year with our next guest. Adam Hill, Raiders beat writer, Las Vegas Review Journal, joins us now at Adam Hill LVRJ. You can find him over on X. And Adam, appreciate this as always, man. I know it's late out there in Houston and you are a night owl, but even this is pretty late out there. First off, you've seen a few camps since the Raiders have come to Vegas. You had Gruden, you had Pierce, you had Carroll. That's quite a trio. What stands out about Clint Kubiak's first camp as head coach of the Raiders?
Well, first of all, what a slap in the face to the Josh McDaniels era.
I forgot that existed.
Completely leave him out of the equation.
You know what?
What's wrong with you?
You know what? Raiders fans would prefer that have never happened. But yeah, I digress. That was a large omission from myself. Yeah.
Well, look, here's the thing. I mean, we joke about it. Aiden O'Connell is entering his fourth season in the NFL. The quarterback for the Raiders, you know, third stringer at this point. This is his seventh offensive coordinator.
That's crazy.
Seven coordinators, Andrew Janoco right now, the offensive coordinator, his seventh in four seasons. It's crazy, but it's been that kind of ride. Look, I think it's interesting when you talk about like the dynamics of training camp or the feel of training camp. And, you know, every single year that I've been covering this team, you have all these, you know, long time people that have been around the team, reporters, everybody. Oh, it really feels different this year. Oh, it really feels different. And I guess it is different because every coach has their own pacing, their own drills, their own different things. But I don't, while I think you can feel a difference in camp, I don't think there's any way to know if that's a positive thing or a negative thing. It does feel like the Raiders are going in the right direction. I will grant that. I think that they've been making a lot of good decisions. I think they made a lot of good decisions free agency. I think they've done a good job the last couple of years with, you know, the way that they're building this under general manager John Spytek. But to say that, oh, there's optimism or it's, you know, you can definitely feel it on the practice field. I think that's a, you know, that's just something you're trying to say. And those are just words. It doesn't matter until they get out there on the field and play.
Yeah, it does feel like on defense specifically, very more professional offensively. Yeah. Should be an improvement with Kubiak coming in. Now, as far as Thursday against Houston goes, we saw the line move. Raiders open -0.5. It's now up to 1.5 total from 38 to 37.5. Reports coming out that Mendoza's going to play a lot. Is Cousins going to play after playing in the first game?
It'll be interesting to see. And here's what's happened the last couple of days. The Raiders had a joint practice with the Texans yesterday. Afterwards, DeMeco Ryan said, you know, we're going to play our starters. They're going to get out there. They're going to play. And we're going to see them on the field. And Clint Kubiak said, we'll see. You know, we're not sure what's going to happen. Now, in the last 24 hours, or now 36 hours, I guess, since practice, you've heard DeMeco Ryans kind of change his mind and say that's not going to happen. I think part of that had to do with the fact that Jaden Higgins got hurt towards ACL. I don't think they want any more injuries. But I also think they looked back on the film and said, hey, we got good work in. We dominated. Dominated is a strong word. We won both sides of the ball in the joint practice. The Texans were the better team offensively and the better team defensively. And I think they probably figured they got some good work in and don't need to play the starters tomorrow. Actually, it's today here. It's after midnight here in Houston. And I think that was their decision. I think on the other side, I asked Clint Kubiak directly yesterday, will the tape from this joint practice impact playing time on Thursday night? And his answer in full was yes. His entire answer. So I think I think the plan was for no starters to play for the Raiders. But I think if they go back and look, it seems like what they're going to do is say, hey, some of these guys might need some work. They might play some starters, at least for a drive, get them out there, because I don't think they were happy with the results of the joint practice.
Yeah, the reports I was reading as well, and you were there to witness it, Cousins didn't look great. So that makes all the sense in the world. Adam Hill is our guest, Raiders beat writer, Las Vegas Review-Journal, at Adam Hill, LVRJ. You can find him on X. The Mendoza thing is interesting to me because everyone's just kind of pointing to, well, the Jets game, week 8, that's when Mendoza takes over as a starter. Here's what I'd ask you. The win total's 5.5. It feels like the objective is be more competitive. I don't know if that nets actual wins, but if they're playing competitive football there, do you think they just hand the reins over to Mendoza at that point? Because after the Jets there in November, they then go to San Francisco. They host Seattle, the Super Bowl champs, and then they go to Denver. There really isn't a soft landing spot for Mendoza to hit the ground running this season.
Yeah, and I'm trying to picture the schedule in mind. The Rams are in there somewhere too.
The Rams are right before the Jets.
Yeah, right before the Jets. So, I mean, that is a brutal stretch of games, without a doubt. I've been talking a lot about this, and I think it's hard to pinpoint a spot exactly where it would be, because you're right. If the idea is to ease him along, and I think that has been the plan all along, I don't think you're easing him along if you throw him into that gauntlet. Right? I mean, yes, the Jets are the Jets, but you know, you're going to throw him in all these very, very difficult games. And I think that it's going to have a lot more to do. There's going to have to be a feeling around the organization, around the team, of just that it's inevitable. Because if they are competitive, as you're saying, if Kirk Cousins has them at, you know, 4-4, whatever, if we get, I guess, 4-3 or even 3-4, and they're kind of right in the mix, it's going to be hard to make that move because you can't go back. And I think what would be disastrous is if, you know, they're in the mix for a playoff spot at that point. Not, you know, not that they're dominated or anything, but they're kind of cruising along and they're just kind of competitive. You put Mendoza in, and I'm not saying this would happen, but if Mendoza loses, you know, 4 or 5 games in a row and he's struggling against this really, really good stretch of games, all of a sudden you say, well, what just happened? Do we put Cousins back in to try to salvage the season? I mean, I don't think you can do that, because once you make this move, you have to make the move permanently. And so I think there's going to be a lot of factors that go in. It's not just going to be, you know, that Mendoza is playing well in practice, or that there's a soft spot in the schedule, anything like that. I think there's going to be a ton of factors that go into this decision, not the least of which is, you know, ownership's going to have a say too. I mean, they invested in a first round pick, and yeah. I think they want to see him out there. And that's just, you know, a lot of people think Mark Davis is not really Mark Davis. It is a very powerful conglomerate that owns the Raiders now, essentially. So I think there's going to be a lot of voices in that room. And one of them could even be Tom Brady's voice saying whether he thinks Mendoza's ready or not.
Help me understand this, because you're a big fantasy football guy. Maybe no beat writer in the country does more of fantasy football than you. Ashton Jeanty, I saw one of my favorite guys out there, Jeff Mann, SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Radio, was getting crushed by random trolls on the internet because he took Jeanty over Gibbs, number one overall in a draft. And then also, Jeanty's rushing prop for this season, 974.5. He had 975 last year on a horrible team with a terrible O-line. How much do you anticipate Jeanty being a focal point of this offense?
A lot. Now, there is a caveat that I'll get to in a second, but for sure. And they're going to run the ball. And they had the worst offensive line in the league last year. The scheme was awful. It wasn't conducive to Jeanty or the offensive line skill set. They've improved it, A, by some coaching with Rick Dennison, who's about as good as it gets. Scheme-wise, the Kubiak system is very, very conducive to Ashton Jeanty putting up yards. And you went out and made Tyler Linderbaum the highest paid interior offensive lineman in the history of the league, and he's lived up to every bit of that. Now, I will say they got pushed around badly against the Texans yesterday, but a lot of teams are going to get pushed around with the Texans. That's an elite defensive line. I think the Raiders are going to have an improved offensive line. I think the scheme is very, very good for Ashton Jeanty. I think he has a big year. I love him as a first-round pick in fantasy. I certainly wouldn't take him number one.
Sure.
That wouldn't happen. But I like a lot of what Ashton Jeanty can do this year. Now, the caveat is they drafted Mike Washington, and he has been, I would say, great in training camp. I love everything that I've seen from Mike Washington. So not that he's going to take a ton of reps away from Ashton Jeanty, but they're going to find a way to get him on the field. So he is a name to watch. He is certainly somebody that's going to cut into Ashton Jeanty's time a little bit. But I don't have too much concern about Ashton Jeanty being a first-round pick in fantasy. I think he's going to live up to that and put up those numbers.
Mike Washington, 6.4 yards per pop last year at Arkansas on a team that really couldn't run the ball a ton. He still had 1,000 yards. Adam, in about 30 seconds, win totals 5.5. Do you think they get to 6 wins this year?
I do. And look, we talked about the gauntlet on the schedule, but there also is some really, really, really winnable games on the schedule. I think there's 4 or 5 of those. So I think they win a game or two that you don't expect. I think they win 6, maybe even 7. So I'm leaning slightly over. This might be the first time since I've been covering the team that I picked them to go over.
Oh, I love it. A little positivity out of Adam Hill. You know what that is? That's Fernando Mendoza rubbing off on you a little bit. He's Adam Hill. Read him in the Las Vegas Review-Journal at Adam Hill LVRJ.
It's also that I had Terry Blacks today, so maybe I'm just feeling good.
You know what? That puts me to sleep, I'll be honest. I appreciate you staying up late, buddy. Thanks for doing this.
Sounds good. Talk to you soon.
Hey, most people think sports betting is about picking winners. Ungambled is built on a different idea. Matched betting and arbitrage. It's a tool that teaches you how to use sportsbook bonuses and promotional offers so that you can capture value, whether or not your side covers. And Ungambled backs it up. If you don't turn a profit on your bankroll in 8 weeks, they refund your membership. To learn more, start with the free guide at ungambled.com/VEASAN. That's ungambled.com/VEASAN. Use promo code VEASAN for 10% off. Bet sharp, look square. We will tackle NFL preseason week 2, plus the MLB baseball card coming up on Thursday. There's an over, there's an under, and a K-prop that I love.
Cashing out. You're on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Oh, baby, what a fun show it's been. Football season's here. We got the old names back in the mix. We're in a flow. Second week back in the late nights. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. I really appreciate you hanging out with me all night long on VSiN, the sports betting network. If you missed any part of the show, we had some bangers earlier today. First hour, James Palmer, NFL insider for NFL on Prime. He'll be a part of those Thursday night football broadcasts. Great insight for him. The Houston Texans, we went through a couple of divisions, including the NFC South, the AFC South, and a few others along the way. Check out that conversation wherever you get your podcast. Hour number two, we were all over the NFL preseason. Cole Thompson on the Texans. John Lund, KNBR in San Francisco. We talked about everything going on with the Niners and the injuries and why he's not that concerned with so many veterans missing time with tightness. Doesn't think a lot of these are going to linger into the regular season. Then earlier this hour, Eric Cohen with Best Bets in golf, baseball, and college football. And Adam Hill last segment breaking down the Raiders. You missed any of that, the VSiN Watch app or download wherever you get your podcast. With that, we do have a couple of NFL preseason games to preview, MLB as well. And let's start with the Raiders at the Texans for VSiN Morning Bets. We open with the Raiders minus a half at Houston. It's now -1.5, Raiders favored on the road. The Texans, the total in this one has gone from 38 to 37.5. I bet the Raiders -120. I anticipate a little bit more movement going the way of the Raiders. I don't really buy into home field as much in these preseason matchups because we don't know what these teams are looking at. You know, it's not like a normal game where you're going to get those teams, those guys at home, comfortable in their own beds. I think this is the spot where Houston's telling you the story. They're not playing their starters. Sounds like the Raiders are going to play Mendoza a ton, and there's probably a good chance we see Cousins. Nothing confirmed, but he had a good series against Arizona. Reports out of these joint practices, he has not been great against this Texans defense. I think Kubiak, with the emphasis of being competitive this year, he lets his QB1 Cousins play here. If it's a drive, if it's two drives, either way, that's more respectable football coming from the Raiders. On the other side, Houston is not playing starters. That's a change in philosophy after the injury to Jaden Higgins. D'Amico Ryans was going to play, guys. Now he's not. They don't have a ton of weapons at receiver to go to. They have plenty of injuries there outside of Higgins. The O-line, starting-wise, is not that great. Can't imagine the backups are very good. So if I was going to do anything else other than the side with the Raiders, I would lean under 37.5 in this matchup between these two teams. After Cousins and Mendoza, Aiden O'Connell is the three. Jacob Clark's number three for the Raiders. For the Texans, C.J. Stroud not playing. That means Davis Mills and way too much Graham Mertz for me to believe in the Texans here. Niners are at the Chargers. We opened the Chargers -1.5 and a total of 39. It's now the Niners -1.5 and a total of 37.5. This is a line move that I'm not buying. It doesn't have anything to do with the fact that San Francisco is going to play their starters, it sounds like. Kyle Shanahan's playing a little bit coy, but they're going to play their starters. Brock Purdy may even play as well. Shanahan said there's a good chance he would play in this game, but you should be seeing Mac Jones. And I think you're going to see a lot of Adrian Martinez more than Mac Jones because Curtis Rourke is out with a rib injury. So if you're getting a ton of Adrian Martinez and you have on the other side for the Chargers, Trey Lance and DJ Uiagalelei, I'm going to side with the Chargers catching 1.5 in this spot. San Francisco, from a philosophical standpoint, they've been dealing with so many injuries in camp. They can't afford to sustain a major one. It just feels like at some point the levee breaks and there's no coming back from this. I think San Francisco treats this game like it does not matter. They're just going through the motions. They're trying to get to the regular season because that's the objective here. You have a coach, you have a staff, you have an organization trying to capitalize on a window where if you just read the headlines, it feels like it's starting to slip away. They need to hold on to their last opportunity. I think they treat this game like it doesn't matter. Give me the Chargers and Jim Harbaugh, who's not afraid of competition in this one. I'll also add San Francisco. I don't know who's running the football. McCaffrey's not playing. Jordan James is injured, and Isaac Garendo is injured. So it's going to be third rounder out of Indiana, Kalen Black, getting a ton of action here. Again, after that, I am not sure who the other options are at running back for the Niners. With that, we'll shift gears, go over to Major League Baseball, do a little three up, three down, highlighting who's hot, who's not coming into Thursday's baseball card. And we start at 12:40 a.m. or p.m. Eastern time in the afternoon. The Cardinals at the Reds. Mike McGreevy, Brady Singer. This is part of three down. Mike McGreevy, his last five starts has been terrible for the Cardinals. A 6 ERA, a 1.75 whip. He is very hittable. He does not miss bats. And on the other end, you have Brady Singer, who's allowed 15 runs in his last two starts. The teams against McGreevy on the other side have scored 12, 11, 20, 12, and 16 runs. Or I'm sorry, the runs scored in the games, not the teams, in the game, 12, 11, 20, 12, and 16. That's going to be way over nine. Give me the over nine with McGreevy and Singer on the bump between the Cardinals and the Reds. Giants are at the Guardians. This will be part of three up as Gavin Williams takes on Landon Roop. Guardians minus 180. Roop's plus 167. 7.5 is the total here. Gavin Williams has been electric his last five, really the last couple months here. In 29 two-thirds innings, 2.73 ERA, 45 Ks, a .81 whip for the right-hander. Give me Gavin Williams in this matchup against San Francisco, over 7.5 Ks at plus 118. It's a hefty number to get to. San Francisco does not swing and miss all that much, but Parker Messick just had double digits against them on Wednesday night. Gavin Williams is a strikeout artist. He is on a roll. Last start, he didn't get to a high number, only had five, but I think this is the spot where he can get back on track. Give me over 7.5. I just like chasing plus money prices when it comes to pitcher props. Another pitcher, part of three up. Let's go to Gerrit Cole. New York Yankees taking on the Baltimore Orioles. This one, the total jumped out to me the most, but Gerrit Cole and the Yanks, minus 127 on the road. Orioles plus 105. Total is 8. Give me the under all day long. Gerrit Cole, last five starts, a 1.99 ERA. He is finding his form. 37 Ks, 31 and two-thirds innings, and a .95 whip. He'll go against Kyle Bradish, who, by the way, at Camden Yards, really solid, 3.34 home ERA. I also like Bradish over 5.5 strikeouts, but I love the under in this game. Yankees offense, not the same without Aaron Judge. And on the other end, I think that, you know, Gerrit Cole will limit a Baltimore offense with Pete Alonso, who's scorching hot, but he'll be able to limit this offense to some degree. 8 felt a little bit too high in my estimation. The other pitcher, part of three up, Ian Seymour, Tampa Bay. How about what he's been putting together this year? Razor minus 160 against the Blue Jays and Shane Beamer, who are plus 149, 7.5 the total. Ian Seymour, over the last five games, he's got a 2.51 ERA, 36 strikeouts, 28 and two-thirds innings, a 105 whip for the left-hander. That's the key here. Toronto is bottom of the league in terms of OPS against lefties on the season. I like Seymour in this one. I wouldn't lay the 160. Instead, I'd probably go first five, lay the half a run, and hope that Bieber implodes on the road at Tampa Bay. But I don't have a lot of conviction in this one. That's going to be a stay away. Just worth highlighting. Seymour has been rocking and rolling lately for the Tampa Bay Rays. Couple other plays I like on the card coming up here for Thursday. Let's look at Milwaukee, minus 125 against Seattle. You know, Robert Gasser may have hit a wall this season, but I think Seattle is a good elixir to that. Mariners 29th in OPS against lefties on the season. George Kirby's plus 112 on the road. I know that looks juicy for a guy with Kirby's track record and name, but he's a guy I don't trust as much on the road, and I trust the lineup for Milwaukee to give run support to Robert Gasser in this spot. It's up to minus 135. It's still playable there. I bet minus 125 as the show is starting, but I like Milwaukee a lot here, even though theoretically George Kirby is the superior pitcher on the mound in this matchup. And then finally, the last play that I like for the card coming up here for Thursday is with Houston. The Astros take on the Angels at home. Pete Lambert and the Stros are minus $1.93. The Angels are throwing Grayson Allen. He's plus 158. 8.5 is the total. But Grayson Rodriguez has been terrible this season. A 7.17 ERA at home in 8 starts. He has an 8.82 ERA, taking on an Astros offense that can absolutely make him pay here. So what I'm going to do with Lambert, who's been very solid this season, give me first five, minus a half run, minus 122 with Houston, because I kind of thought when I opened that up, it was going to be minus a half run, minus 140. Minus a half run in the first five, minus 122. That is very palatable here. Astros better team, better lineup, better pitcher. It feels so good. I can't wait to find out how we lose this one with the way things have been going lately. So those are the plays. St. Louis, Cincinnati over 9. Yankees, Orioles under 8. Kyle Bradish over 5.5 strikeouts. Gavin Williams over 7.5 strikeouts. That's plus money. Milwaukee minus $1.25 against Seattle. And the Astros first five, minus a half run, minus 122 against the Angels. Hey, get your betting day started every day, 7 a.m. Eastern time. It's VSiN by the books. Dave Ross, Jensen Lewis, they got you covered. They hand the baton off to a numbers game. Gil Alexander takes over at 10 a.m. Eastern time every day, followed by Prop Points, Jeff Erickson, Nick Whalen at 1 p.m. Eastern time. It's all right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. I'll be back on Thursday. Locked and loaded, we will react to Thursday's preseason action plus preview what's to come with the weekend. Plus, don't forget, the fantasy football draft comes your way at 5 p.m. Eastern right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.